Our final speaker on this panel is John Pfeffer, who's Director of Foreign Policy and Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies. He's been a writing fellow at Provisions Library in Washington, D.C., and a Pan-Tech Fellow in Korean Studies at Stanford University. He is a former associate editor of World Policy Journal. And today, he's going to give a comparison of spending on the U.S. military-industrial complex and the prevention of global warming. So, John.
Thank you very much for the introduction and for the invitation. I'm delighted to be here. Of course, I have an unenviable task, because, of course, we've been talking about an existential threat to the world, nuclear annihilation, war, and I have to address a second existential threat to the world, climate change. And, of course, I'm not up here to try to tell you which I think of these two scenarios will do us in the end. Quite the opposite. I'm up here to say that we must find a way to address both of these existential threats simultaneously. And like Hans, I'm going to begin with some good news. And like Hans, the good news is brief. But it is Sunday morning, and we haven't all had our coffee yet, so we need a little bit of good news. My colleague, Miriam Pemberton, at the Institute for Policy Studies, does an annual report comparing military spending and climate change spending here in the United States. And according to her statistics, in 2008, we spent $88 on the military for every dollar we spent on addressing climate change. So the ratio was 88 to 1. As of today, as of 2013, the ratio has narrowed. So in other words, for every $24 we spend on the military, we spend $1 on climate change. So we've gone from 88 to 1 to 24 to 1. Another bit of good news for those of you who read the National Security Strategy, the most recent one coming from the Obama administration, the 2015 National Security Strategy. You might have noticed a difference between 2015 and 2010. Climate change in 2010 was outside the category of security. And in 2015, climate change and global health pandemics were both brought inside the definition of security. Now, for those of us who work on the issue of human security, this is a good thing. Finally, the United States is acknowledging that security is not just a question of the military, of hard power, but that our very notion of security has to address other issues, including climate change. So this, for what it's worth, is good. And then the final little bit of good news is that the president, President Obama, well, he actually seems to believe in science, climate science. Now, I mean, this shouldn't be good news. I mean, everybody in Washington should believe the science. But of course, as you know, there are plenty in Congress who are, frankly, insane. So that's good. The president also believes in the standard benchmark that we should reduce climate emission or the emissions, carbon emissions, by 80% from 1990 levels by 2050. That's good. And number three, he believes that we should do it internationally, that this is, he believes in some sense in international cooperation. Okay, so that's good news. It's minor perhaps, but important to recognize. Now, of course, here's the bad news. It's not enough. Going down from 88 to 1 to 24 to 1, it's hardly anything. It's hardly a reduction at all. Not enough resources being put into addressing the threat of climate change. Number two, we've seen no transformation of the American economy, no weaning ourselves from the dependency on fossil fuels that produce the emissions that are contributing to climate change. And number three, and now we're getting into the heart of the matter here, we fundamentally have no understanding, or I should say that Washington has no understanding of how much this is going to cost, how much it's going to cost to address climate change. Now, when we talk about the cost, there are basically two price tags here. Okay? The first price tag is how much climate change costs the economy now. Okay? And the second price tag is how much it's going to cost us to address climate change. Let me talk about the first price tag, how much climate change is already costing us. Now, the U.S. government uses a figure, and that figure is $37. Okay, $37 is what it costs the economy for every additional ton of carbon emissions that go into the atmosphere. $37, that's the impact it has. And now that's the impact, for instance, on decrease in agricultural yields. It's the impact on our health. It's the impact on worker productivity. So that's the calculation the U.S. government uses, $37. Now, the problem is that that's probably a low ball figure. There was recently a study published by Stanford University that said, well, $37, not even close. Actually, the cost is closer to $225 per ton. That's a big difference. You know, that's 6-7 times more. And what's important here is that if you take this larger figure of $225, then suddenly you see much greater urgency. Because obviously, what we're pumping into the atmosphere is costing our economy right now a great deal more than what the U.S. government thinks it costs. Now, also the question is, who's the we here? So, of course, the impact on the economy depends where we are in the world. The impact on the U.S. economy is one thing, but there's also the impact in the less developed parts of the world, where the impact economically, frankly, is much greater because of their infrastructure or because of their vulnerability. We saw the vulnerability in the Marshall Islands. Plenty of countries in the world have greater vulnerability to climate change. And so the cost on their economies right now is much greater. And so for them, the urgency is much greater. But let me move to the second price tag. And the second price tag is how much it's going to cost us to actually stop global warming, to arrest climate change, to hit that benchmark of the 80% reduction by 2015. How much is that going to cost all of us? Well, that's, as you might imagine, a controversial question. Some people who don't believe in climate change, of course, don't think we have to pay any money whatsoever, okay? So that's the lowball figure, zero. But we don't believe that, so. The IPCC, which has been producing a number of very important scientific reports on climate change, so their estimate on how much it's going to cost all of us in the world per year to address this issue is approximately $450 billion. $450 billion per year. Okay? The International Energy Agency has a different figure, which we colloquially refer to as the clean trillion. In other words, it's going to cost us $1 trillion a year to address climate change effectively. Now, how much do we spend globally on the issue of climate change right now? Retrofitting, solar energy, those kinds of things. Approximately $250 billion a year. So obviously, we have a shortfall here, whether we take the $450 billion or the $1 trillion figure. But, and here's more bad news, probably even that $1 trillion figure is a lowball figure, because it doesn't take into account a number of very important things. One, the amount of money countries like the United States, Western Europe, Japan, should be transferring to the developing world to enable them to continue to grow economically and not have an adverse effect on the climate. So, resource shift to the developing world to help them address climate change. That's really not taken into account in that figure of $1 trillion. Number two, extreme weather events, which we're all becoming more familiar with, there's an additional price tag for that that's really not included in the trillion-dollar figure. And then finally, international conflicts. Well, one of the reasons why climate change in the national security strategy has been incorporated into the definition of security is, well, frankly, not because so many of us have been lobbying for this definition of human security. Frankly, it's because the Pentagon has become very much concerned about climate change. Because the Pentagon has been producing any number of reports saying that climate change, the global warming, is going to increase the competition for resources around the world, water, fossil fuels, and therefore increase international conflict. So there is a price tag there as well, the increase in international conflict that results from climate change. Okay, so we have a big price tag, at least $1 trillion, at least, to address climate change. Where's this money going to come from? Well, that's the really tough question. Number one, at the moment, globally, we spend approximately $500 billion on fossil fuel subsidies, subsidizing oil, natural gas, etc. It's a lot of money, $500 billion. Any attempt to address climate change will have to reduce, if not eliminate, those subsidies. But that, theoretically at least, frees up about $500 billion. Mm-hmm, per year, annually. Number two, as a possibility, something we've been pushing for at the Institute for Policy Studies is a financial transaction tax, a tax on financial transactions around the world. Very small, but because of the sheer scale of financial transactions, you could raise a lot of money on that. Mm-hmm. And much of that money could be pushed over to address climate change. The Europeans are all on board in terms of financial transaction tax. We here in the United States, not so much. Got some support in Congress for this idea. But this is a possibility. This is a real opportunity for popular civic activity to push for this here in the United States. I mean, there are advantages not only, of course, in terms of raising money, a revenue boost, but it also has the possibility of reducing the impact of what's called hot money. In other words, the rapid fluctuation of financial activity, capital moving in and out of a country very quickly or in and out of a sector very quickly, that leads to the kind of economic dislocations we've seen, for instance, with the financial crisis. So there are a number of benefits to a financial transaction tax, something I think would be very useful for us to incorporate in our activities when we're talking about how we're going to pay, either for climate change or for any of the other, retiring of the nuclear arsenal, which costs money as well. Are we going to pay for all this? And then, of course, the obvious answer, the military. What's the one pot of money in the world that we should be drawing from to address the other existential crisis, namely climate change? Military. How much do we spend globally on the military? Approximately $1.75 trillion. It's a lot of money. Let me make a plug, by the way. Global Day of Action on Military Spending has been taking place every year around the world. People saying, we spend too much money on the military. We have to reduce. We have to reduce. Global Day of Action on Military Spending will be on April 13th all around the world, including here in the United States, suspiciously close to Tax Day for a reason. So keep your eyes out for that. I think if you go to demilitarize.org, you can learn more about that. So $1.75 trillion, if we take just a modest, though of course it's not modest, 25% cut in this global military budget, we raise $430 billion. That's a lot of money. Of course, we here in the United States, we have a special responsibility. We heard about our special responsibility in a number of ways on this panel. Our responsibility to the Marshall Islands, our responsibility because of the size of our nuclear arsenal. But we have a special responsibility as well because of the size of our military budget, which is, as I'm sure I don't have to go into, enormously larger than any other country, as well as all the other countries combined. So we have a special responsibility, a responsibility which, of course, the Obama administration has not acknowledged, seeing as it would like to increase military spending. But the Obama administration is actually not even the worst, I'm sorry to say. Now, right now, we spend approximately 3.2% of our GDP on our military budget. A number of Republican hopefuls, we're not going to talk about the Democratic hopefuls, but the Republican hopefuls would like to boost that to 4%, or even higher, to 5% of our GDP, because they say we face a dangerous world, a world getting ever more dangerous, and we have to increase our military spending as a result. So they'd like to get it up to 5% of our GDP. Obama himself said back in the fall, we face these three crises, ISIS, Russia, Ebola. So even the president is saying, hey, we have these problems out there that require, in some sense, a military response. Even Ebola, as you know, it was the Pentagon that ultimately was sent out to deal with this problem as well. So let me finish with one additional suggestion. I talked about the financial transaction tax. I talked about reducing fossil fuel subsidies. I talked about how much I would like to see a reduction in military spending. But what is the mechanism for getting a reduction in military spending? Well, here's one possibility, internationally speaking. What if, for every country that spends in excess of, say, 3% of its GDP, but you could lower that, 2.5% of its GDP, for every country that does that, it gets taxed. It has to pay into a fund. And that fund would then be used to address climate change. Well, that would be a pretty powerful international tax, if we will. So not only a financial transaction tax on transactions, but a tax on countries that frankly spend too much money on the military. That would be pretty powerful. Now, I'll leave you with one example, which I think is an interesting example. For all of its problems, China has actually set a much better example on this issue than the United States has. And when I say all of its problems, I mean both on the military side and on the environmental side. China has been increasing its military spending quite dramatically, has been modernizing its nuclear arsenal. So on the military side, it's been spending money. Not nearly as much as the United States, but it's been spending money. And on the environmental side, well, any of you who've been to China, especially Beijing, know that the environmental situation isn't great in China. Terrible air pollution. There's desertification taking place throughout the country. So there are a lot of environmental problems in China. But despite the fact that it continues to spend a lot of money on its military, and despite the fact that the environmental situation inside the country is not superlative, China does a hell of a lot better than we do on this ratio. Remember, the ratio that I gave you at the beginning, the United States has improved. It's gone from 88 to 1 to 24 to 1. Okay, so there's some improvement, but even today we're at 24 to 1. $24 spent on the military for every dollar that's spent on climate change. So, what about China? China, it's almost 1 to 1. $1 spent on the military, $1 on climate change, addressing climate change. Well, hell, we should at least be able to do that here in the United States. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, John. I like any solution that has us taking money away from the military, so thank you for that. WILF's 100th anniversary is going to be held in The Hague in April, just after the Day of Action Against Military Spending, and we're also going to incorporate a big public action on military spending in The Hague.